Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast. I'm your host, Spencer Caron. On December 14, 2020, the Supreme Court released its decision in Texas versus New Mexico. By a vote of 7-1, Texas's motion to review the Pecos River Master's determination, namely that New Mexico was entitled to a delivery credit for evaporated water stored at Texas's request under the Pecos River Compact, is denied. Justice Kavanaugh's majority opinion was joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Thomas, Breyer, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Gorsuch. Justice Alito filed an opinion concurring in the judgment in part and dissenting in part. Justice Barrett took no part in the consideration or decision of the case. Today, Anthony L. Francois, senior attorney at Pacific Legal Foundation, joins us to discuss this decision and its implications.
I'm going to talk about three things this afternoon or this morning, depending on the part of the country you're in. First of all, just an explanation of the background of this dispute and the Supreme Court's decision, which will probably take a bulk of my comments. But then two related or perhaps just interesting side points. The first is the style of writing in this decision, which I think is for those who follow the Supreme Court, kind of interesting, and indicates a general move in the direction of a certain type of writing style by the justices. And then finally, I'd like to offer some observations on the role of water disputes in the Supreme Court's docket and what we might glean from this decision and some other recent decisions, as well as cases that the Supreme Court has declined to hear in the water space, if you will. So let's start out by talking about Texas versus New Mexico. This is a water dispute between two states, and it arises out of the implementation of a compact between Texas and New Mexico and a resulting Supreme Court decree that adjudicates between the two states their relative rights to the waters of the Pecos River, which arises in kind of the northeast corner of New Mexico, flows through a lot of New Mexico, including past the town of Roswell, and then through West Texas until it meets the Rio Grande River. And it's not as significant a supply for either state, for example, as the Rio Grande is itself, but still it provides a significant amount of water for urban uses, for farming and other uses on both sides of the Texas-New Mexico border. As is always the case with multi-state rivers, the upstream state, in this case New Mexico, has something of the pole position, if you will, in the use of the waters because they can get them first. And so these compacts and the adjacent decrees typically operate to provide a baseline of flow that the upstream state has to allow past its border to the downstream state. That's how these types of disputes are typically resolved at a practical level. And then the decree, which is pretty common in these types of conflicts, whether they be between states or just adjoining property owners, provides for a court official, in this case the title is River Master, to implement the decree on an ongoing basis, and is as common in water disputes that result in decrees. The court retains ongoing jurisdiction to enforce the decree so that the decree can be enforced in court as a motion to enforce the decree rather than any of the parties having to file a brand new lawsuit and start the whole thing over from scratch. So that's the structure of the governance of the Pecos River between New Mexico and Texas. You've got a fairly longstanding, I want to say it goes back to the 1940s, allocation between the states that establishes an amount of flow that New Mexico is required to release to Texas at the Texas-New Mexico border, confirmed by a decree entered by the Supreme Court, which retains jurisdiction over the decree and appoints a river master, who's an officer of the court, to implement the decree on a day-to-day basis. So in that framework, one of the things that's provided for in the Pecos River compact is a procedure for Texas to ask New Mexico to hold some of its water in New Mexico, you know, for reasons that are, you know, whatever the reasons might be. And the decree provides that if New Mexico stores Texas's water at Texas's request, then when it releases the water later, when it delivers the water later, it can deduct from the amount it originally stored an amount for evaporation losses. And that's important to understand just the hydrology of that. So if Texas says, New Mexico, we want you to store 100,000 acre feet of water in one of your reservoirs. It's actually quite a bit of water. Let's call it 10,000 acre feet of water. Well, New Mexico is also storing its own water in that same reservoir. And, you know, there's no, you know, you don't put a dye in the 10,000 acres that's Texas's so you can go gather that up when it's time to deliver it. It's all fungible. And so when New Mexico is called upon by Texas to deliver some of the water it has stored for Texas, that's coming out of a common fund, if you will, or a common pool of water. And that reservoir is constantly experiencing some evaporation loss. And so the question is really, if New Mexico stores 10,000 acre feet of water for Texas, say for 2 years, well, during that 2 years, a certain amount of all of the water in that reservoir will have evaporated. And does any of that evaporation apply to Texas's stored water to reduce the amount that New Mexico has to deliver? Or conversely, as Texas argued in this case, are they entitled to the entire 10,000 acre feet that they've had stored there for 2 years as though none of it had evaporated? So the particular dispute that arose, and so what the decree says, excuse me, is that when New Mexico stores water in New Mexico at Texas's request, then when it delivers the water, it may deduct evaporation losses from the amount of water it releases to Texas. The particular dispute in this case arose in 2014 when there was a fairly severe tropical storm that hit this region of the country. And as a result, the Pecos River ran very high. And as it flowed across the New Mexico-Texas border, rapidly filled up a reservoir just inside Texas. And as that filled, actually threatened to overtop that dam and cause significant flood damage unless Texas were to make very large releases from that dam, which would in turn cause flood damage downstream. So Texas is looking at this management problem. We've got more water than we know what to do with, more water than we have space to put during this winter storm. So they ask New Mexico, would you please hold several thousand acre feet of water in a reservoir in New Mexico so that it doesn't create this condition of flooding and subsequent damage in Texas? And New Mexico immediately responds, yeah, we're happy to do that, but we consider this to be Texas's water, and we consider ourselves to be storing it at Texas request, and specifically referring to, if not explicitly invoking, the provision of the decree that says when we do finally deliver this, it'll be net of evaporation losses. So later in 2014, after this storm is over, the two states begin negotiations with each other about when and sort of how much at a time to deliver the water that was held in New Mexico. And they don't get very far very fast. It takes them a while to figure out by mutual agreement what they're going to do and when. And one of the things that they argue over is whether or not this particular holding of water in New Mexico is subject to the decree provision that when it's released, it would be released net of evaporation losses. So they argue back and forth about this. Meanwhile, the River Master does an annual report that is published, I want to say by March 15 every year, covering the prior year's water operations, the parties then and resolving certain disputes. The parties then have a fairly limited period of time, I want to say about 60 days, to file objections to anything in the report. The River Master then has until the middle of the year to publish a final report, and only from those annual final reports may any of the parties seek review in the Supreme Court. So in the annual report dealing with, among other things, this storage of floodwaters in 2014, the River Master's report says, rather than resolving that question, says this is an open dispute that the parties are negotiating in. We're going to leave this open. The parties both agree with that. They say, yeah, we'll get this figured out. And if we can't figure it out, we'll ask you to figure it out. And so the River Master's final report simply for that year simply says the parties are trying to figure out what the answer to the evaporation losses is. Over the course of a couple of years, Texas and New Mexico continue dickering over this, and they can't really come to conclusion. And so and I forget in the details whether the River Master finally says, enough, I'll tell you what the answer is, or if New Mexico says, we're done talking about this, River Master, you tell us what the answer is. However, it comes about, the River Master decides that the net of evaporation losses provision of the decree applies to the water stored at Texas's request, grants New Mexico an evaporation loss credit of about 21,000 acre feet, and finalizes the in a kind of an odd procedure, not clearly provided for under the decree or the River Master's manual, sort of retroactively amends the final report for the year in which the storage occurred. And so it's from this decision of the River Master that Texas seeks review in the Supreme Court. And Texas made a number of technical arguments. They said that the River Master had no ability to basically to resolve the question because the River Master had to amend the manual, his manual of operations, in order to then amend or retroactively revise the annual report for 2014. And Texas argued that New Mexico had basically waived any right it may have had to an evaporation credit by not objecting to the original preliminary report for 2014 that the River Master published. So Texas's argument to the Supreme Court was, when the River Master said in March or April of 2015, we're leaving this particular 2014 question open, that was the only time that New Mexico could say, no, we object to this being held open. You have to decide this question and decide it for us. In addition to those procedural arguments, Texas argued to the Supreme Court that under the decree, the water that remained in New Mexico at Texas's request in order to avoid flood damage was not within the category of what the decree categorized as or defined as stored water at Texas's request. And Texas raised this point that it was just kind of a sidebar, kind of a distraction. But as you'll see if you look at the Supreme Court decision, did at least draw the attention of one of the justices, Justice Alito. Texas argued that because the retained water, call it that, was retained in a reservoir in New Mexico operated by the Bureau of Reclamation, a federal agency, that could only be considered, quote, stored water if it had been held in that reservoir under a federally described in federal statute, contract for storage, which is a term of art in operations of Bureau of Reclamation facilities. It's defined in a federal statute, and because there was no contract between Texas and the Bureau for the particular water held in that reservoir, that it could not then be considered stored under the decree. If any of you listened to to the teleforum that we presented following the oral argument, my sense of the oral argument is it's very difficult to see which way the court was leaning. There were a lot of good questions to both sides, and it did not appear clear what the outcome would be. I think my take on it, this was argued on October 5th, so this was one of the two cases argued on the first day of this year's term, and it seemed like Texas may actually have the better reading of the relevant decree and federal law, but that the equities really seem to go more in New Mexico's direction. And something that didn't, and so it's hard to see how the case would turn out. Now, what the Supreme Court's decision this Monday holds is that New Mexico is correct. And it does it in a very simple, straightforward way. It says the decree says water stored in New Mexico at Texas request gets an evaporation credit when New Mexico finally does deliver it. And that Texas's various arguments to the contrary don't really work because the decree doesn't add any technical limits on what stored means in that provision. And so you give it an ordinary language reading, and by any stretch of the imagination, the water in question was stored in a reservoir in New Mexico at Texas's request. And that's really the heart of Justice Kavanaugh's opinion for the court in the case. And it's important, I think, and this is an aspect of this case that eluded me as I was reading the briefs and observing the oral argument, which is that it's kind of interesting that the water they're arguing over, if New Mexico had not stored it for Texas's benefit, it would have crossed the border into Texas and caused rather significant harm somewhere in West Texas. And so it seems a little bit, that might understate it. It seems significantly kind of dog in the manger-ish of Texas to be demanding no evaporation credit for water that New Mexico held for its benefit. If New Mexico had not stored the water, it wouldn't have been to any benefit to simply release it as part of the flood flows to Texas. It would have caused grave harm in Texas. So this might go under the no good deed goes unpunished rubric. Justice Kavanaugh's opinion, I think, reflects a couple of important realities about water disputes and about cases that fall under the Supreme Court's original jurisdiction. a lot of these cases that the Supreme Court does hear. What is it lately about Texas and original actions in the Supreme Court? But I digress. The Supreme Court doesn't do evidentiary hearings. It is fundamentally a court of last resort as an appellate court deciding legal questions. And so when it is the supervising court of a decree or a judgment over which it retains continuing jurisdiction, the Supreme Court will rely very heavily on what in this case is a river master or a water master in water rights cases. But in other types of cases, the court will appoint a special master of some kind under the federal rules to administer the decree or the judgment. And because the court would otherwise have to do its own fact finding, would have to hold a trial in the Supreme Court of facts, the court, I think, historically and now is going to be very loath to overrule its own river master, its own appointed official who administers the judgment on a day-to-day basis. And so I think the way I would describe the court's view of a motion like this, please review the determination that your river master made, is, you know, we're not going to unwind what our appointed river master did here unless you've got something really good. And I think Justice Kavanaugh's opinion here, you know, reflects the court's consensus that what Texas brought here is just not really good. It's not a solid enough argument that the river master made a mistake to warrant the Supreme Court undermining its own appointed special master and directing either another take on it or a different outcome.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.